Dog Works Radio is sponsored by Alaska Dog Works. Check out their website at alaskadogworks.com. Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto from Mushing Radio. You can hear all of our episodes over on KVRF 89.7 in the Mattsu Valley. RadioFreePalmer.org is our live streaming site. You can find all of our episodes over on DogWorksRadio.com. Be sure you check us out on social media at DogWorksRadio. And joining us today is a dog musher calling in from Healy, Alaska. Her name is Kristen Knight Pace, and she is an author of a brand new book called This Mush Country. Kristen, how's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
I am well, thank you. Could you do us a favor and introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what you're all about, please?
Yes, my name is Kristen. I am a long-distance dog musher, a mom of a two-year-old, and a newly published author. And I live here in Healy, Alaska, with our 30 dogs and in a little one-room cabin right now. So you can probably hear my two-year-old in the background and perhaps lots of dogs barking. But I figured everybody on this tuning into this show wouldn't mind.
They won't mind at all. I know you guys were on the show a few years ago. I think it was right after you finished Iditarod. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. You finished Iditarod and Yukon Quest in consecutive years. Is that right?
Yes, I finished the Yukon Quest in 2015. And then in 2016, Andy ran the Yukon Quest and I ran the Iditarod right after that. So 2016, we did both races back to back.
And you have a pretty interesting story that leads up to getting involved with mushing. I understand that you are from Texas, and you moved to Alaska like a lot of folks do, chasing dreams and trying to get away from the big city and all that. Can you share a little bit about that, how you arrived up here in the last frontier?
Yes. So I, in 2009, went through a pretty abrupt ending to my marriage at the time. I lived in Montana. I had been with my former husband for 7 years, and very suddenly he up and left. And so I wasn't quite sure what to do with my life. And my friend Jess, who lived up here in Denali and worked at the Park Service kennel, gave me a call and said that there was a guy up here off Stampede Road in Healy who had a cabin and 8 sled dogs that he needed somebody to caretake for the winter. And it seemed like a perfect opportunity for me to start over. So that's what I did. A month later, I loaded up and drove up here with my 2 dogs, Moose and Maximus. Moose is the dog after whom our kennel is named. And been here ever since.
So I was reading your Facebook profile, and you've got quite a bit of experience in the outdoors. I understand you worked as a camp director and did a whole bunch of other stuff as well. And you also got a degree in photojournalism from the University of Montana. So you're not a stranger at all to being outside, even though moving up to Alaska is probably quite a bit different than what you were used to down south.
Right. Yeah, I was a backpacking counselor at an outdoor adventure camp. And it's a camp I had gone to when I was a young girl. And I learned how to pack horses, lead a big, long pack string of horses out into the mountains for a week at a time, go backpacking for a week at a time, just learned how to take care of myself in the woods, starting at age 12. So that definitely laid the foundation for me developing some outdoor skills, and then went to college in Montana. And after that, I got my National Outdoor Leadership School instructor certificate, worked for the Forest Service, ended up working as a backcountry ranger for the Park Service up here in Denali. A lot of outdoor experience.
So you had mentioned that you worked with am I correct that you worked with the sled dogs there at the Denali National Park?
Yeah, right after I graduated from college, I had my degree in photojournalism, and I actually had done my thesis project on working dogs. So the sled dogs, definitely, you know, seeing that internship totally caught my eye for a number of reasons. I'd always loved working dogs, and I thought that working with the sled dogs would not only add to my project that I had started, but also just, I mean, it was just so right up my alley, and it was a super competitive internship. But I got the job, and I was up here for 6 months right after college and got to spend that summer doing dog sled demos for the public and learning how to take care of a sled dog team.
And that really, those sled dogs there at the park is a really good introduction to folks into the sport of dog mushing. They, you know, they learn about what it's like to be a working dog at that point. And a lot of visitors, of course, take that tour up there. You know, they come up on the cruise ships and then head up there on the buses and whatnot. And that's really their first introduction to mushing. Can you tell us what you think people's overall impressions of that are? You know, a lot of people romanticize the sport and see it on TV and, you know, watch movies like Iron Will and Eight Below and that sort of stuff. But until they're really up close with a group of working dogs, it's a different experience, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, people would, you could actually hear the audible gasp of everyone's surprise when the harnesses came out and the dogs started going crazy. You know, because the Park Service dogs see tens of thousands of visitors every summer. And so people, seeing a big group of people, that's nothing new for them. They kind of laze on top of their houses and, you know, they're like kind of interested, but not really. Sometimes they'll lift up their head if someone tries to get a dog's attention to, you know, come over and let them get a butt scratch or whatever. But, you know, the dogs are super chill. And then the people all take their seats in the grandstand. And as soon as the musher comes out and, you know, brings the harnesses out and the dogs see that, you know, we all know the dog's reaction. But for all of these visitors, they've never seen anything like that before. So I think for them to see how much these dogs love their jobs, it's a pretty huge surprise for most people. And I think it's just so delightful to see the reactions, you know. And you do this tiny little loop on a gravel track with the sled and you end in front, you know, with a cart, and you end in front of the grandstand of people, and everyone just, you know, erupts in applause and they're so excited. And I mean, like, total contagious enthusiasm that starts with the dog. So that's pretty fun to see every day.
It is. And, you know, like we said, that's a great introduction to sport. It produces that positive vibe that we so need in this sport, you know, to be able to promote it in a positive way. So let's talk a little bit about that in-between time. You had mentioned coming up in 2009 and then running the big races in 2015 and 2016. I assume that you were busy building up your kennel during that time and, you know, preparing to run a long-distance race, but you also did it as a couple. And I know in our recent Iditarod coverage this year here on the show, we spent a lot of time talking about couples running in the race, you know, husband and wife or, you know, partners or whatever that, you know, whatever the setup is. But it's sometimes difficult to run a couple of teams in big races like this. Can you describe that scenario about working not only with your partner and your husband, but just being able to field a couple of competitive teams in the big races?
Yeah, that, I mean, you know, it all started, like, Andy and I met in 2010 up here, and then, like, fell in love over the course of a summer, and I got a job as one of the Park Service dog mushers over that following winter, and during that winter, I volunteered at the Iditarod, and it was the first time I had ever, you know, seen it up close. And I was just mesmerized, and I knew, like, everything in me was like, you have to do this. And so the following winter, I worked for Jeff King, and I learned the ropes from him in terms of, you know, how to train a race team. I got to run my first sled dog race ever, the Sheep Mountain 150, which was super fun and crazy, you know, really technical terrain. And, like, I thought I was in way over my head. But I ended up just loving it in the long run. And he, at the end of that season, was like, you know, I'm going to sell these 4-month-old puppies. Like, I know you and Andy want to start your own kennel, and this is one of the cheapest ways to do it because these dogs haven't had any training yet, you know? So I would sell you the puppies for a really good deal. And of course it's a lot more years of work than like buying super trained up dogs and having a lead dog already and all of that. But if you're willing to put in the time and the effort, this is a really fruitful way to go. And so we looked at each other for like 10 seconds and we're like, all right, let's do it. And so we bought those 3 puppies from Jeff. Then we bought a 10-acre parcel of raw land out here on Stampede and just got to work, putting in power to a cabin, building a dog yard, starting with those puppies and raising them up. And then once they got old enough to breed, doing a breeding with Mike Williams Jr. and splitting that litter with him, and then training Brent Sass's yearlings and getting to keep half of them, and just slowly over years, you know, building the kennel, running our qualifiers, and finally getting to sign up for that first 1,000-mile race in 2015. So pretty long, slow grind, but, you know, everyone who has a dream like that knows that it takes years of hard work to finally get to the start line. So we were prepared for that, and we did it all side by side. And then in terms of fielding 2 teams, like, we definitely didn't field 2 whole teams. Like, Paige and Cody, or Alan and Allie running like 2 whole teams in the same race. We never wanted to have a kennel big enough to be able to do that. Like, the most dogs we've ever had is 35. Right now it's 29. So, we just wanted to have 1 super solid team with a couple of reserves and run those races back to back. So my Iditarod team in 2016 was almost all of Andy's Yukon Quest team that same year.
That's awesome. You know, being able to do that as a couple is an amazing thing, because you have, and for folks that don't know much about mushing, I guess this is a little bit of mushing humor, but you have a built-in handler, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, we're always, it's kind of awesome because the other person is just as invested in those dogs as you are. They're footing the bill just like you. They have put in the time just like you. It's not like some outsider coming to help you. It's like the dog's other parent, you know? So it's a pretty sweet deal.
Right. So after the Iditarod and the Quest, you took a little bit of time off. You had mentioned that you have a 2-year-old. Where does, pardon me, but I don't know if it's a boy or a girl, but where do they fit in now in the mushing perspective?
Well, so Ada is, she's a girl. She's 2 years old. I got pregnant with Ada almost right after I crossed the finish line of the Iditarod in 2016. She was born in December 2016. And I had finished the Iditarod in March. So pretty soon, right after there, we started building a human family. And we took those 2 seasons off. Andy just finished the Yukon Quest a month ago this year. So we got right back into the racing scene, which was super hard. Ada and I handled for the whole Yukon Quest. So that's 2,700 miles of driving the dog truck, toddler.
Wow.
Thankfully my amazing parents and sister came up to help us, and our wonderful handler, Nikki, who helped us train the team this winter. But the whole dynamic has definitely changed having a kid. Cause you know, you can have a handler run a dog team for you, but you can't necessarily have them watch your child for 8 hours. So it was always one of us out there running the dogs and not both of us like it's always been. And that was definitely took some adjustment. And then, you know, for Andy being out on the trail while I'm wrangling our crazy toddler, you know, it was hard, a lot harder for him to maintain that singular focus that is required of you to run these 1,000-mile races. So, it was a test on all fronts this winter, for sure.
Well, it sounds like you guys are doing it right, and kudos to you for sure. I definitely want to get into talking about your book and how it relates to everything that we're talking about. But first, I want to send our listeners over to your website. It's haymoosekennel.com. And I remember seeing your website for the first time years ago, and I was mesmerized by all of the cool drawings, you know, all of the pictures that you have on there that look like they're kind of like pencil graphics. Can you tell us a bit about those?
Yeah. When we came up with the idea for our website, we wanted it to look kind of whimsical, like a kid's book. And Andy's brother, Jason, was the one who drew all of the, he drew our logo with, you know, the spruce forest and the log cabin. That's our actual house. And then drew Moose, the giant sled dog, out front. And, you know, we had a lot of fun making it. He made the background look like sketch paper, you know, like rough sketch paper with smudges on it. And it's just super cool. I mean, we're really proud of it. I think it looks awesome.
So, guys, definitely head over to haymoosekennel.com. Check it out. Leave some comments on our blog post. These guys do some great commentary on their site. It's definitely something you want to check out. So let's jump over to your book. It was published here just in time for Iditarod, and you said that was deliberate, and we'll talk about that in just a second. It's called This Much Country, right? And I have to have a little play on the words. I keep wanting to say mush. Is that deliberate in terms of the...
No, that was just by chance. I got the sentences in the book, and it was a sentence that happens right at the end of Andy finishing his Yukon Quest 300 qualifying race. And just the fact that, you know, all of us who were involved in that race started off as strangers and ended up becoming really close friends, and that it was kind of a wonder that you could strike out across this much country and find like a tribe of your very own at the end of it. So that's where I got the title for the book, but I've definitely had some mushing friends accidentally call it This Mush Country for sure.
Right. Well, you know, living in Healy there, it truly is this mush country. You had mentioned Denali National Park, which is down the road from you. You had mentioned Jeff King, who is also sort of right down the road from you as well, there in Denali Park, where his kennel is at. So you have a lot of mushing cohorts around your area, don't you?
Yeah, yep. Dave Dalton's kennel is right up the trail from us. He's up on Slate Lake. And then just around here, I mean, on our street, at one point there were 195 dogs and 6 humans. So, yeah, I mean, almost all of our neighbors have a kennel ranging from 12 dogs to 40 dogs, depending on what their operation is. Not many racing mushers in our neighborhood. Most of them do the big gear hauls across the park or, you know, do passenger tour operations. So they have, like, big, nice freight dogs and big freight sleds. And it's kind of fun to see the diversity up here in this neighborhood, because you can do – just about anything with the dog team, and it's well represented up here.
So on your book, you had mentioned that it was released at the beginning of March, just in time for Iditarod. What a great time to release a book about mushing, and it's a memoir. Tell us about that. Why did you decide that direction versus kind of a nonfiction story or a different format? And for folks that may not be up on what a memoir is, can you describe what that is compared to a different type of storytelling?
Sure. Well, a memoir is nonfiction. It's autobiographical. So, you know, it's something that would describe a period of time in your life, you know, written in the first person. And so it's very personal. And, you know, I mean, I think every writer pours their whole self into their work. And so whether you're writing fiction or nonfiction, you know, it's personal, but it's kind of funny because I just did a book signing in Anchorage and had someone standing in line to get their book signed. And they were like, so what's this book about? And it's just, it's kind of awkward, but funny, because you're like, it's the story of my life, you know, like the book is about me going through a divorce and starting a kennel up here and running the 2,000-mile races and being one of not very many women to do so. But yeah, I mean, it is it's a pretty personal account of about a decade of my life.
And it's interesting when you said the customer, the fan, whomever bought that book didn't know what it was about. What is sort of that reviewer understanding? You know, here you are pouring your heart out on the page, and I'm sure it was written much later than when it was published. You know, sometimes can have quite a bit of lead up to it. What do you think when people are reading your story on a page? You know, it's a little bit different than a website or on social media or something like that, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think the nice thing about books, like holding an actual book in your hand, is just the ability to be completely immersed. You know, when you pick up a book, you make a decision to carve out a little bit of time for yourself and to disappear into a different world. And the book's a page turner. I mean, my editor did an awesome job helping me with the pacing of the book. But I mean, it, you know, you can, almost all of my friends who have read it have sat down and just read the whole thing in a matter of 1 or 2 days. Probably my favorite, though, because I recorded the audiobook as well. Like, I'm the one who reads it. And Brent Sass, who's one of my best friends, he is in the book, too. But, you know, he had been kind of peripherally involved. Like, every once in a while, I'd send him a chapter or I'd send him a paragraph. And so when the book came out, he downloaded the audiobook and was like, I'm going to go on a training run and listen to the whole thing. And it's 8 hours and 41 minutes long. And he did. He hooked up a dog team at 11 a.m. and ran 78 miles and listened to the whole damn book, which just made me laugh so hard. But yeah, it's a pretty engrossing read. So that made me really proud to hear that, you know, people could be transported into my world for a little while and that it kept them engaged.
You know, that's an awesome story, and what a testament to, you know, to honoring your work. And you talked about Brent Sass hitting the trail and just to take a listen. And I think that's really cool. And for folks that are listening to this, most of them are pretty hardcore Mushing fans. So when you're dropping these names, they're just saying, oh my goodness, I'm sure, you know, they mentioned Jeff King and Brent Sass and all of that. And I think that's so cool that there's such a family connection in the Mushing community. And I think that's important, not only, you know, in the small world of Mushing, but also just kind of that community as we build together. Do you agree?
Oh, definitely. I think, you know, I feel like, and we've been involved, we've run 3 Yukon Quests and 1 Iditarod, so we have more experience with the Yukon Quest, but everyone calls it the Quest family for a reason. It seems like, you know, I mean, even if it's years between seeing your fellow mushers, if someone takes some time off, like, it feels like no time has passed at all. You're just reconnecting with family. And the Yukon Quest chapter in my book is probably my favorite chapter in the whole book, but Lance Mackey and I ran about 500 miles of the quest together and had the time of our lives. So there's some really funny stories in there about traveling with Lance, who's just an awesome travel partner. And I, watching the Iditarod Tracker right now, watching he and Jesse Holmes together, it's like, oh man, no matter how tough the conditions are, I know that those two are having a blast together, because Lance is just so much fun to travel with.
And of course, he has a very interesting story himself, and you know, he's done the book thing as well. And I've written a children's book, so I know, understand a little bit of the process, but I would like to ask a couple of questions about that if I could.
Sure.
So I love to hear the nuts and bolts and behind the scenes stuff when I have authors or filmmakers or any of those creative types on our show. My first question to you, Kristen, is what was the time frame that this took from the time you sat down and said, I'm going to write a book, till the time that you sent it off to the editor for that final time? How much time took place there?
Well, so 2016, I finished the Iditarod, and I had been featured in a Tribeca Film Festival documentary that was about me running my first Iditarod and Katie Orlinsky, the photographer who does extensive work for National Geographic and the New York Times, and she had been covering the Quest and the Iditarod over the course of a couple of years. So they did kind of like this twofer documentary on she and I together. And that air or that debuted at the Tribeca Film Festival in April 2016, so right after the Iditarod. And they flew Andy and I out there, and we got to sit in a movie theater and watch this movie for the first time. And Sarah Jessica Parker was the, the person who led the discussion panel afterward, which was totally surreal. And so that experience happened, and while we were in New York City, I reconnected with an old friend from camp, which is, you know, that adventure camp that I used to work at. And she was like, you know, I've been reading your blog for years. And I had, you know, I had been a writer in a previous, did a newspaper. I was the executive editor of a big magazine in Seattle. So writing had always been a part of my life. And I definitely had written a blog, you know, all through my experiences. And she was like, I think that you should write a book. My sister is an editor at Flatiron Books. And, you know, I told her about your story, and she thinks that you should get in touch with her. So total serendipity, like we were just walking across the Brooklyn Bridge having this conversation. So I talked to her sister, and she was like, here's what I want you to do. I want you to write me an email with basically your story in a nutshell and attach some writing samples. And I'm going to send it to a handful of literary agents and see if anyone wants to take on this project, because I think it's a really good one. And so I did that, and she sent it first to her favorite agent. Her name is Brittany Bloom at the Book Group in New York City. And she read my email and my writing samples, and she talked to me on the phone a few times, and she was like, we want to sign you. Like, we love your story. We think it'll make an awesome book. So I signed with the Book Group, and that was like in July 2016. And then Brittany and I spent a year working on the book proposal. And the book proposal ended up being a 65-page document that first has, like, it lays out the summary, kind of that nutshell email version, you know, of the story. And then it outlines chapter by chapter, you know, if you have finished chapters, which I did, I had like four finished chapters. I included those in the proposal and then kind of outlined what the rest of the chapters would be about. So then Brittany shopped that proposal around to numerous publishing houses. I got rejected by a couple, but I got very nice long rejection letters, which is always heartwarming, because then you get to read about, you know, what they liked, what they didn't like, how could the proposal improve. So we, you know, took, I got a book deal with Grand Central Publishing, and the editor there, Maddie, she and I just instantly clicked over the phone. She's a total dog person, and, definitely got my story and was super enthusiastic. So then we signed a book deal with Grand Central Publishing, and that was in July 2017. And then Maddie and I spent, oh my goodness, a little, like maybe a year and a half. No, about a year writing the final text. You know, I would make the edits that she suggested and then send it back to her, and then she would review and send back to me. And I had the final text in December 2018. And then from December to now, it's been like, you know, in the meantime, they designed the cover and asked me what I thought, and went back and forth on that, and then did all the technical editing and the proofreading and the fact-checking and the legal review. And then I recorded the audiobook in, I think it was January. And then here we are now in March. So quite a journey.
Quite a journey. And Kristen, that is an amazing story. You're in the big time. You know, a lot of people these days, they do the self-publishing route, which you can do right off of Amazon. And, you know, it's full of grammatical errors and the whole nine yards. But, man, you're in the big time, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, Hachette Book Group, which owns Grand Central, they're one of the top five publishing houses in the country. So, yeah, I'd say it's the big time for sure.
That is so awesome. I know that your publisher is sending me out a book as well. I just contacted you when I saw it pop up there right before I did her on. I said, I have to have you on my show. So I haven't even had a chance to take or read it yet, and I look forward to it as well. I'm sure it's probably sitting at the post office today. Kristen, we have just a few minutes left, and I think we've covered a lot about the book and, of course, a lot that in the book as your lead-up. You know, you talked about your story coming up and all that. But what else would you like to share? What else is happening at Hay Moose Kennel? Are you guys running Iditarod again? Is that in your future? Are we thinking about some junior races for the little one? What are we thinking about?
Well, I'm actually 16 weeks pregnant, so almost halfway done. but we're having another kiddo in August. So we've kind of, you know, taken account of, if you came to our homestead right now, it's very obvious what we have put the work into, which is our beautiful dog team and our brand new dog yard and, you know, the shed full of mushing gear outside. And then you look at our home and it's a one room log cabin that needs a new floor with no running water. You know, like, it's pretty obvious what we need to focus on right now before we have a family of four living in here. So we're taking a little bit of time off racing to focus on improving our living situation and making it so that having two little kids in here isn't going to be like untenable. That's the plan. We do have a little kid sled that Ada loves. I have some awesome videos on our Instagram of her on her little mini dog sled. She's pretty obsessed with it, and she wants to go faster and faster. So I think it might be in her blood to become a little mini musher someday. That's the plan for now.
So one last thing is, I believe you guys offer tours in the summertime or in the off season. Is that correct?
Just in the winter. So right now we have a co-op with our neighboring kennel, Rockin' Ridge Kennel, and together we are outer range dog sled tours, and we just do little 1 or 2 hour trips right here in the Stampede Corridor, right at the edge of Denali National Park. We do homestead tours too. People can come play with the puppies and just walk around the property with the dogs. So we have a little bit of something for everybody, but no summer tours just yet.
Okay. Sounds good. And I will definitely post a bunch of links over on your show page with how folks can get in touch with you. Where is the best place to buy the copy of your brand new book?
It's available everywhere online and all bookstores. So you shouldn't have too hard of a time finding it. Whether it's your independent bookseller or Barnes & Noble or Amazon, it's available at all those places.
Excellent. Well, Kristen, it was a pleasure having you on today. We're talking to Kristen Knight Pace. She is the author of the brand new book called This Much Country. It's a memoir about her life becoming a dog musher. She is a Iditarod and Yukon Quest finisher. It's definitely something that all of our listeners will probably enjoy, and I look forward to reading it myself. Kristen, anything else you would like to mention in closing?
No, thanks so much for having me. It's been wonderful talking to you guys. And, of course, we're down to talk dogs just about any old time. So always a pleasure.
Excellent. Well, Kristen, hang on just a second while I close the show and we'll finish up. So on behalf of my guest today, Kristen Knight Pace, this is Robert Forto on Mushing Radio. Make sure you check us out over on social media, searching for Dog Works Radio. And you can find all of our episodes online at dogworksradio.com. And if you search hard enough, I think you can even find that old episode where we're talking to Kristen and Andy a few years ago. So on behalf of that, we'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.